Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking with Robert Knott. He will be here speaking of the arts. Right now, I'd like to welcome Calvin Helene. He is the author of the book Dances with Dependency, Out of Poverty Through Self-Reliance. And he will be at all sorts of book signings this weekend during Indian Market. Tomorrow, Saturday, he'll be at the Institute of American Indian Arts Museum store on Cathedral Place from 2 to 3. And then on Sunday, he'll be in the Indian Market book tent from noon to 1, and at San Busco Borders at 2, and then at El Museo Cultural at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Wowie zowie. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Very interesting book, Dances with Dependency. It's about the Native American, and you're from Canada, but I think the issues are universal and can, to some extent, or large extent, be generalized to the United States as well. The issues of dependency of Native people on the federal government.
Yes, I originally wrote this book to try to help Native American people move forward. I grew up on a small reserve in northern Canada and was witness all my life to the terrible social pathologies and the situations that my own people had to live through. And when you grow up and that's all you see, I wondered why we were in this situation. I wondered if we were having to go through all this suffering and misery because of our Native American heritage. And what I learned about this after thinking and studying it for a long time is we were in the situation not because we're Native American, we're in the situation because of government policy.
So what are the government policies that keep Native people disproportionately dependent?
Well, both in Canada and the U.S., what happened was the federal government wanted to control tribal populations. And the way they did it was to make them dependent on the government.
Control them in what way?
To be able to control their movements, to be able to... essentially, they needed to control them in the U.S. to remove them as a hindrance to Western expansion. There used to be at one point, it's estimated 70 million buffalo between the Mexican border and in northern Canada from coast to coast. And in the 1800s, by government policy, they slaughtered the buffalo herds, virtually wiped them out, and the purpose was to control Native Americans that relied on the buffalo. They didn't need to have the government in order to survive, so it was very difficult to control them, very difficult to make treaties with them, very difficult to try and control their lands. And what they did was they wiped out their source of food. And and in northern Canada, with the Inuit and in Alaska, they slaughtered the dog sled teams of the Inuit who were able to make a living and survive by hunting and trapping.
So meanwhile, those horrible periods of essential, you know, massacre of animals and the results of that being poverty, death, disease, and everything else that probably many of our listeners know about. But then in its place, the people who survived were culturally weakened and economically weakened, and then suddenly there's, or not so suddenly, but you know, then federal programs come in.
Yeah, basically what happened is originally through the British government, they had a brilliant strategy for controlling Native Americans or any populations in any country they went into. What they did was they undermined the traditional governance structure of the people whose country they were seeking to take over, and they put in their own government, and And when they put in their own government, they provided a little bit of resources and money. And instead of rising up against the colonizers, the people that were being colonized started fighting with each other over the resources that were provided. So this is what happened in North America as well. And over several centuries, we went from being completely self-reliant to being completely reliant on the federal government. The federal government instituted a variety of programs. And the problem with that, there's a variety of problems with it, but if you look at any OECD country, 90% of the wealth in a typical country comes from the private sector. With Native American communities in general, even though there's exceptions like these huge casinos, 100% of the wealth comes from the federal government, and there is no, generally speaking, private sector. So what tribes have been forced to do is to basically figure out how to milk the government cow, and it's led to a really terrible situation. And at the end of the day, my purpose in writing this book is to try to help Native American people move forward, because at the end of the day, this system really hits hardest Native American women and children. They're the victims of a situation which they had no hand in the making.
We're talking to Calvin Helene, author of the book Dances with Dependency. So you have a situation of not only dependency on federal government programs, but inadequate federal government programs in many ways, and then an aging population which will, in the years to come, strain the federal government or governments that are administering these programs in the first place, and the people who are going to be worst off are people who are poor.
Yeah, basically, if you don't mind, I'll answer that question after I explain a couple of things. One thing I realized is that what's happened is we've been socialized into a dependency mindset where our population has come to regard government as the source of solving all of our problems. And at the end of the day, we've been led into thinking that somebody else is going to sort out your problems. And the truth of the matter is, if we don't take ownership of the problems that face us as Native Americans, we will never solve the problems. We have to take responsibility for them, no matter who caused them, how they were caused. I know there's been all kinds of injustices, but if we don't take ownership of these problems in our hearts and minds, we will never solve them. And so that's the first step. But in order to understand and to be able to move forward, we have to understand how we got here in the first place. And that was my purpose in painting this picture. I was brought up on a little reserve, so I was one of the trees in the forest. And it's very hard to see the forest if you're one of the trees in the forest. And so I had a very difficult time trying to paint a picture of how we got to where we are as Native Americans. And so I told the 10,000 year canoe journey story. And I said, well, let's just take, most Native American tribes have been in existed in places where they're living for at least 10,000 years. Where I'm from in northern British Columbia, we've been there for 13,000 years continuously based on archaeological evidence. And I said, well, let's just take that a period of 10,000 years and say we've been sailing through time and space on this metaphorical canoe, all North American tribes. And why is it, the question I asked was, why is it that it's only been in the last 400 years we've had all these problems? Why was it that for 9,600 years we existed just fine without government programs? In fact, tribes flourished. And where I'm from, there were the province of British Columbia, there were 32 completely different languages, more languages than almost any place in the world. And throughout the whole of America and there were tribes with complex societies, you know, wonderful arts and traditions.
Tremendous resources, a lot of land.
And so I had to go back that far to explain to myself and explain to other Native Americans that, hey, it's only been a very short period we've been in this situation of dependency.
And as you say somewhere in the book, the Native people who you're working with today would have an awful lot of trouble competing against their own robust ancestors.
They would. Can you imagine the commitment and state of mind of indigenous people that had been through 10,000 years of self-reliance? You only need to look at the photographs of the old chiefs or read some of their speeches to see the strength and the spirit and the quality of the people. And so a lot of people, when they first read my manuscript, they said, you're going to get beat up by everybody because you're saying things that are politically incorrect. And I've written about this stuff in a very truthful, honest manner.
Which is really refreshing, I have to say. I mean, but you're talking about, let's really cut to the meat of the question, which is, what does self-reliance for Native people look like today? Could it look like? Does it look like somewhere?
Well, I think we have all kinds of very good examples, and which I've cited in my book. Self-reliance. That one thing to understand about dependency is there's an inverse relationship between how dependent you are and how much control you have over your life. The more dependent you are, the less control you have over your life. And I believe that's why we're having a lot of problems. Essentially, Native American people, in a lot of cases, feel they don't have any control over their lives. And it leads to all kinds of problems, all these social pathologies and suicides, etc.
Right.
But
I mean, it's not just like, you know, we all sit in a circle and say we have control over our lives, and then you do. I mean, what are the actual, what does having control look like? What does self-reliance look like?
What does self-reliance look like? First of all, you have to decide, as I said, that you're going to take control over your life individually. Then, I think, in the modern context, what you need is education. If you want to have control over your future, you have to have a very high level of education.
And as you say somewhere in the book, there is a kind of underutilization of the educated members of Native American communities at times, and even a mistrust.
Well, what's happened is before, one of the hallmarks of tribal cultures is that they were completely interdependent. People depended on each other to a very, very high degree. They did that because your next meal depended on your tribal member, right?
Right.
You had to work together. And when you introduce an artificial form of sustenance, like welfare and transfer payments to tribes, the moment you do that, you no longer have to depend on each other. So, for example, in my community, when my grandmother needed a house, her tribal members just milled the wood, got together, milled the wood, and they built her a house.
And your grandmother was a chieftain, which is very interesting. You come from a line of chiefs.
Yes, that's right. And so the understanding amongst my family members when they built the house, or when everybody else built the house for my grandmother, was that whenever they had an elder that needed a house, we would build it for them. And so you supported each other. So that's one of the underlying features of tribal cultures. And what's replaced it, when you have people that don't have employment, it's replaced with what's become known as lateral violence. Have you ever heard that term before?
Lateral violence, no, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I never knew what that meant until I started writing these books, but I knew that it's such a bad problem in our communities that there are being courses offered on how to deal with the fallout of lateral violence across the country. And what it essentially means is that if you're at the bottom of the social and economic heap and you can't strike out at those above you, you start striking out at each other. And so there's a huge amount of shaming and putting each other down, violence towards each other in our communities. And
well, it's like what you said about the British colonial strategy in the first place, is come in and get people to fight among themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happened. And what we need to be reminded of is how powerful it is when we work together, and how useful that is.
I think there's a set of really important questions that come up about different philosophies, Western versus indigenous philosophies. One of them that you bring up in the book is the idea, you know, the land doesn't belong to us, we belong to the land. We live in a world where the land belongs to us. Everybody, you know, buys their acre or 50 acres or quarter acre or whatever. I mean, how do you... It's like a great cultural conflict when you impose a completely different way of seeing land, seeing ownership, seeing your relationship to nature on another people. It can really mess up their way of life. So are you talking about, I mean, when you say we had 9,600 years of self-reliance, are you talking about actually going back to a type of self-reliance that involves not really being involved with the system, you know, the medical system, the infrastructure of the United States and Canada, you know, hunting and fishing? What does it look like?
No, I don't think we can go back to the way we were, because we've, in a lot of cases, lost our languages, forgotten the skills that are necessary to do that. We clearly have to deal with a modern world, but that doesn't mean that we should have lost the wisdom and the philosophies that allowed us to survive for so long. I think what we have to do is have...
I mean, are they still applicable? Are they still relevant?
They sure are. But what I'm saying is we have to have a modern economy. We clearly have to generate our own resources. If we're going to survive in the modern world, we have to be able to develop our own economics. But having said that, does that mean we wholesale abandon our past views and so on? And there was a famous speech by Crazy Horse 4 days before he was assassinated. He was smoking the pipe with Sitting Bull, and one of the things he said was, he said of the Europeans that he had seen at the time, he said that this world people are very selfish. They don't look forward very far. And he said within the next seven generation, this culture is going to come back to Native Americans to look for guidance for the future. And so now we have a Western society where we're lucky if we're looking towards the next quarter. And we're dealing with a planet that is very fragile, and we have to be very careful for how we deal with it.
Well, somebody could say to you, you were talking about moving Native communities forward through developing Western-style capitalist economies, but those are the very economies that are screwing us up by being so short-term oriented.
Yes, we have to be able to develop our own economics, but we can do it in a way that has a much longer term timeline to them. I think that's what separates Native American views of how to develop things, from possibly a lot of mainstream economics. But you have to be able to have some kind of a vision of moving forward. And with a lot of our chiefs, they've been socialized into this system where, at least in Canada, the only question that they ask to solve the problems of our people is, we need more money from the government.
Now, when you talk about developing economies, and let's say you go through programs of education and understanding of the past, understanding of these issues of reliance on the federal government, you want something different. Are you talking now about creating self-reliant programs that are self-contained? Are you talking about Indian communities, Native communities, selling products to the outer world and realizing a gain? What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is economic integration.
Integration with the mainstream.
With the mainstream, not assimilation, which people
What's
sometimes...
What's the difference?
Well, assimilation means you become like everybody else. I've heard a lot of people say that if you get involved in modern economics, you're going to be selling out your culture and your tradition. But my question I ask those people is, are Chinese less Chinese because they're involved in the modern economy?
Some people would answer yes to that. There's a great deal of Chinese tradition that's been lost.
Well, there has been, but they're certainly very culturally Chinese. They haven't forgotten their Confucian roots. They still speak and write Chinese, and they're still Chinese. But on the other hand, if you're arguing that what we have now is the answer, response to that is, what culture and traditions are there in picking up a welfare check?
Well, I mean, let's grant you that. And so where in Canada or the United States or other places in the world can you see models of the type of economic integration that you're talking about that are working?
One really good example are the Choctaws of Mississippi. The Choctaws had a chief that came back from Germany. He was stationed there after the Second World War, when under the Marshall Plan they were rebuilding Germany, essentially. And he was a young man, and he would get up in the morning and he would see the Germans dusting off bricks of their bombed out cities and literally rebuilding their cities.
I've seen that in Dresden. I've seen Germans actually make computer images of their rubble so that they could put the pieces of rubble back together, and they had each one numbered with a number and a letter.
Well, that sounds very Teutonic. What he took from that is, even though he came from the poorest tribe in the poorest state without any natural resources, he said to himself, he said, if they can do that here, why can't I do that back in the good old US of A? And so he took that attitude back to his community, and he started a development program. And today, this is all pre-casino, they have done fantastic developments where they were completely impoverished third world citizens, where now I believe they have something like 15,000 employees in their businesses.
When you have somebody doing a development initiative like that, it seems to me that that is the kind of place where the federal government could actually be useful in providing, you know, capital or seed money for a program that's going to eventually be self-sustaining.
Yeah, they have been useful in creating various kinds of programs. In the U.S., I understand you have Section 8A preference contracting. Those things have been quite useful in giving Native American people a hand up rather than a hand out. And so he started this program, and so they've employed every person that's available in their tribe, and two-thirds of the people they're employing that are coming onto the reserve are non-Native Americans. And they're buying back their lands and their traditional territories that they lost. So, and when you have resources, you're able to protect your culture and your traditions by having the resources to be able to do that. If you're stuck in a welfare trap type of poverty, you have no resources, right? So now they can create programs, they can utilize their elders and compensate them in a way that's valuable to them. Another good international example are the Maori of New Zealand. The Maori represent 15% of the country's population. In 1984, the entire country almost went broke. I don't know if you remember all the financial problems that they had. And so as part of the debate on what to do about getting the country out of the mess, it was in the Maori themselves launched into a debate about what they were going to do. And they talked about going from grievance to development mode. And what that means in their context was they felt the purpose of grieving is to allow you to adjust to a trauma, and all indigenous people around the world have been beat up by colonialists in some way or another, so there's a justification in grieving. But once you decide you're going to move forward to development, instead of asking the question, who are you going to blame for this, the only useful question is, what are you going to do about it? And so they decided they're going to develop. And they've done extraordinary things. They are an example where their culture has been, and their traditions have been hugely strengthened by their economic muscle. They, I believe, have close to $10 billion in assets as corporations in a little country that's quite significant. They have a proportional representation national election system. They have kind of deciding vote in their national parliament. And the country is bicultural. It's a very, very good example. And so if you look at, they did a study in New Zealand where they looked at the pure economic contribution of the Maoris versus their offset against their welfare paid and their transfer payments. And they in 2004, I believe, they were $100 million net contributors to the country. Whereas if you looked at Canada, the Aboriginal population there would be $20 billion net non-contributors to the country. And this has become more important to the general population because, you know, we have a third of our population, just like the U.S., set to retire. And this has become an issue not of of wanting to throw a little bit of money at Indians to get them out of your hair. This has become an issue of employing those young Native American people as contributors to the bottom line of the country.
Calvin Helene is author of the book Dances with Dependency, Out of Poverty Through Self-Reliance. And he is in Santa Fe all weekend, once again from tomorrow at the Institute of American Indian Arts Museum store from 2 to 3 in the afternoon. That's right across from the Cathedral of Santa Fe. For more information, 983-1666. And then also tomorrow at the Indian Market Book Tent on the plaza, 983-5220. For more information on that, that's Sunday noon to 1. Then at Borders at San Busco Center from 2 o'clock on, and then at El Museo Cultural at 5 o'clock. Wow, lots of readings. Very interesting book, very interesting ideas. Calvin Helene, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you very much. And the El Museo function, I'll actually be given a speech at that function rather than just a book signing.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. We're going to take a little break right now. Robert Knott will be with us in just a second. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. And he is here with us almost every Friday speaking of the arts. Not the last Friday, though.
No, I wasn't here. What happened?
I went on, dare I say it, vacation.
Oh, that's what happened.
That's the first. It's actually the first. I've been doing this show. It'll be 5 years on September 1st, and it's the first real vacation that I've taken. Every other vacation, I've always taken my computer with me and done work and answered emails and all this stuff.
And this time, you didn't bring none of that with you.
None.
You certainly didn't bring me with you. I showed up here last Friday, and nobody was around.
I
had a cup of coffee
and
chatted. 5 years, and it'll be 4 years for you and I in September.
Yeah, for you and me.
Right. Well, that's what I just said.
No, you said for you and I, which is incorrect.
Well, maybe it is, but it still means the same thing.
No, it doesn't. It's just incorrect.
People know that I and me is the same thing.
No, would you say me is going to work now?
Me is going to work now? Yeah, maybe. I would. You wouldn't.
Me am going to work now? I don't think so, Robert.
Here we go. A mutual distraction association here.
The pronoun problem. It's serious.
Never mind the pronouns. Did you want to make an announcement about some church?
Oh, yeah. No, I have a little paper in my hand. So as not to forget, Church of Beethoven tomorrow morning, 10:30, El Museo Cultural. Passacaglia for solo violin by Biber, poetry by Lisa Gill, solo cello by Johann Sebastian Bach, and trio for strings Ludwig van Beethoven. And that's all at El Museo. And there's espresso drinks served from 9:30 on. More information, 310-2843.
Okay, assuming you have no interest in traffic jams or Indian Market, then you should probably avoid the downtown area at all costs this weekend, because it is the 87th annual Indian Market. And if that does interest you, then get you down there. If you live on the outskirts of town, you could probably even take public transportation, because I have a feeling parking is not going to be easy to come by. Although the New Mexican, among other downtown organizations, I know is like selling parking space, not too expensively, but you know, you'll probably have to shell out at least five smackers for that stuff. But anyway, Indian Market really starts late today with a Best of Show Awards ceremony at El Museo Cultural. That's at 4:30. There's a sneak preview tonight. And then really it runs from 7 to 5 on Saturday and 8 to 5 on Sunday, basically on the plaza and the surrounding streets. And there's a number of events surrounding these artists who set up shop and sell their wares. Their Plaza Bandstand has a number of performances from about 1 to 4 both days. The Swaya Book Tent will be taking place in a tent on the plaza, and a bunch of mostly Native American, I assume, authors will be signing copies
of
like the book.
Yeah, like Calvin Helene, whom
right,
we just spoke
who you just
to.
Had to.
And many other, authors sponsored by, among others, Collected Works Bookstore, who I'm just looking at. They've got an awful lot of authors.
Collected Works is having a little tent in Borough Alley right across the street from where they are on West San Francisco Street.
Right.
And among other things, tomorrow from approximately 10:30 to 3, they're going to have some of the surviving Navajo Code Talkers on hand to sign copies of books about the Navajo Code Talkers. And if you don't know who they were, you should pop by, say hello, and pick up one of the books, because they were instrumental in really helping us win a lot of the battles in the Japanese theater in World War II with their indecipherable code that they came up with themselves in the U.S. Marine Corps.
Why they call that a theater, I just don't know.
I don't know. That's a good thing to research, but I got no time for that now. Native Cinema Showcase is going on at CCA, sort of tied in with the Indian Market. A number of Native American films. Robert Benziger wrote a couple pieces on them in today's PASA. Most of today's PASA is filled with Indian Market stuff, including an overview by Craig Smith. And then several of us took various historical photographers who shot images of Indians, both realistically and exploitatively, and wrote about them, whether it was Edward Curtis or Ben Wittick or Harmon Parkhurst. And Paul Weideman did a great Q&A with our cover story, whose name now is totally escaping me, but I want to say it's McBain or... Oh, I'm going to get shot now. I know I am. Anyway, pick up the Pasta Tiempo, which, by the way, today went up in price. Sorry about that. Larry McNeil. Larry McNeil. Great Q&A with Larry McNeil.
The price of the paper went up, or the price
on Fridays?
Only on Fridays.
Only on Fridays. Isn't that interesting? I wonder why. Yeah, so now you got to shell out...
6 bits.
Well, let me figure out how many the bits are. Anyway, let's go off to something else. First of all, Santa Fe Art Institute. Monday night, 6 o'clock at the Institute, which, as you know, is on the College of Santa Fe campus.
That's so true.
They are going to pay tribute to some of the Gulf Coast artists who survived Katrina and Rita. And they're coming out for a night in New Orleans, which is eat poetry, performance, music, food, which includes gumbo.
Food.
And John...
You said the magic word.
I certainly did, and it's free. We can say that on the air here at KSFR. Free, free, free. 6 o'clock Monday. Go on out for it. You're going to hear music. You're going to hear writings. You're going to hear Christian Champagne, the satirist and poet. Hunt Scarrett, the writer, actor. John K. Lawson, novelist. They're all there. Now let's do a flashback to 1964. Bear with me. And then I'll bear for you. Naughty me. And then you can say a few words because it's your show after all. You look beautiful this morning. It's nice to have you back. It's nice to have your front, too. Okay, so it's 1964.
Oh, boy.
And Dean Martin is cutting an album with 10 songs, and he's got 9 of them laid out, and he doesn't know what to do with the 10th song, and his wife Jeannie says...
You know, you just turned bright red. I just want everybody to know that.
Yeah, I know. It's a combination of flirting with you and talking about Dean Martin anyway. So, his wife Jeannie says, why don't you play that song from the 50s, Everybody Loves Somebody? And he records it, and it becomes a big hit. It knocks the Beatles off the chart, which was amazing in 1964. Now, why am I bringing this up, you say?
I am wondering.
Because up in Taos... Barbara Jones is doing a one-woman show called Everybody Loves Somebody, and it's all about Dean Martin.
She's playing Dean Martin?
Can you believe it? It's a female impersonator doing Dean Martin. That's going to be terrific. I'm very, very excited about that. I always wanted to do
a
Leslie
male
Gore.
Impersonator, I suppose.
Well, she's a woman, but she's going to be singing.
She's impersonating a male. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying she's impersonating. I don't know. She's going to be singing Dean Martin songs.
That's great.
So it's going to be, you sound...
No, I'm serious.
A lot of us there. It's going to be at 6:30 on Saturday at the Lumina Gallery up in Taos. And then it's going to be at 3 p.m. Sunday at Cafe Loca. And specifically how to get there and what phone number to call, check the Paso Tiempo page 12, but I will give you a phone number. 575-758-0202. Everybody loves somebody sometime. I love that song.
I know you do.
Everybody falls in love somehow. Well, something in Mary Charlotte's eyes just told me that sometime is now.
Robert, I don't know. I haven't been back long enough to handle this. Let's change the subject for a moment to Small Dog Rescue at Teca 2 in San Busco Plaza, which is right in downtown Santa Fe, Saturday, tomorrow from noon until 3. Small dog adoptions. They've got some very cute small dogs, I just have to say.
And you have small dogs. You have 3.
I do. I have 3 small dogs.
They are adorable.
I know.
I've seen them many times.
They're good dogs.
And they kiss and they lick and they're all...
Except I took all 3 of them to the Santa Fe Art Institute Open Studios last night, and Horatio started barking during one of the readings. It was very bad.
He likes to bark.
He likes to bark.
Huh, must have been a poetry about cats.
He likes to vocalize. He's actually a poet in a dog's body.
Well, that's why you call him Horatio.
He's Oscar Wilde.
Horatio was like a Greek scholar, wasn't he? There was Homer, Horace, and Horatio. There were 3 of them, right?
I don't know.
They were like the 3 Stooges, except they wore togas and they said intelligent things. I'm telling you, Horatio was a famous... You don't even know who you name your dogs after. But I have one little side story for you. One day you asked me to walk your dogs for you.
Yes.
And I took them in the park near your house in the morning. And sprinklers came on like at 7:30. And I was halfway into the park and there was nothing to be done. Why didn't you tell me about this?
Horatio is a character in Shakespeare from Hamlet.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
That reminds me, Hamlet Part 2 is playing at the Vargas Mall today. It's a movie. Movies I like that are playing in town, I still think Swing Vote's a very good picture. Go see it. Mamma Mia is a lot of fun if you like ABBA. I liked...
That's a big if right there.
The Luke Wilson picture, Henry Poole is here. It's a picture about faith. It's over at the Vargas.
I like Luke Wilson.
He's very good. It's a nice dramatic turn. It's not comedy. Speaking of comedy, with a touch of drama and some music, Garrison Keillor's bringing his renowned Prairie Home Companion to Santa Fe once again. Tuesday night, 8 o'clock at the Opera. It's the Rhubarb Tour.
At the Opera.
With Susie Bogus.
Hey, the Opera's ending.
Yes, it is.
We're almost at the end of the Opera.
It's probably the last week to get up there and see stuff. You know, there's Radamisto, there's Farigamo, there's Falstaff, there's Billy Budd, which was excellent. I saw 3 out of 5. That's not bad. I usually see 2 out of 5, so this year I upped it once. But I didn't want to go see the serious ones where people die. Why do they sing?
They don't really die, Robert. It's theater. They're acting, but then they get up again and they make a bow at the end. That's how you can tell they didn't die.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Hey, at Body of Santa Fe this weekend, tonight at 8 o'clock, The Magic of Native American Storytelling and Flute Playing by Chin. And that's at 8 o'clock, 986-0362 for more information, or bodyofsantafe.com. And then tomorrow at the James A. Little Theater, Make Life Beautiful Project Concert for Peace and Healing, Grammy-winning taiko player Koji Nakamura with Yukiko Matsuyama, Marisato, Yangjin Lamu, Danny Wilding, and Tom Burks, traditional Japanese and contemporary music, and that's at 7 o'clock.
Man, talk about...
That's sponsored by Body of Santa Fe, but it's at the James A. Little.
Great pronunciation there of all those Asian terms and stuff.
Whatever. Oh, and also the Rainbow Players are doing their final performance of Over the Hill, Under the Rainbow at the Unitarian Church at 107 Barcelona here in Santa Fe at 7 o'clock tomorrow.
Paul Casey's Elvis. Dun, 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 dun. It's Elvis month. August is always Elvis month because he died in this month. Camel Rock Casino.
Yeah.
8 o'clock tomorrow night. You got to pay to get in. Call Camel Rock if you're interested. He played here a couple of years ago. He doesn't call it an impersonation. He sort of feels like he channels the spirit of Elvis. And that's okay. That's good for me.
Whatever works, I say.
50 gallery openings tonight. pick up Pasta Tiempo, look at page 109 of the calendar, and you'll see them all. You can't list any or all of them, really, because there's just so much happening. But
you know what? If you walk up, if you walk around downtown and walk up Canyon Road.
Both places, downtown and Canyon. It's not just Canyon. Downtown, some of the events downtown, Blue Rain on Lincoln, they're going to have a show.
And what about the up-and-coming 2nd Street neighborhood?
And the up-and-coming 2nd Street neighborhood, I don't know. I don't know if they're having shows. Baca, I don't know if Baca Street is having any shows this weekend. I know Delgado Street's having its Delgado Street Walk, where you walk down Delgado Street, which is off of the off of Canyon. So those are good questions.
In
Figaro,
any case, if you walk around, yeah, if you just walk around and go into galleries, that's all you need to really know.
Right.
Just start there.
Pick up the pop.
Follow your nose.
Figaro's tonight's opera.
Follow Robert's nose.
The Fiesta Melodrama is back.
Yay!
The Corny Calamities, or An Irreparable and Irreparable of the Prairie Ear, or Crime on the Cob. Oh, boy. 8 o'clock tonight. Santa Fe Playhouse on DeVargas Street. You got to pay to get in. There's a story in today's Pasta Tiempo. 988-4262. Meanwhile, Juan C.D. Flamenco Theater continues at the Lodge of Santa Fe. 8:30 tonight. Craig Smith gave them an excellent review, says it's a really good flamenco company. Filling in, so to speak, for Maria Benitez this summer. It's in the Maria Benitez room, 988-1234. Meanwhile, Native Roots and Rhythms Performing Arts Fest.
Yay!
Kicks off tonight. Doors open at 4 o'clock. The show begins at 7:30 at the Palo Soleri Amphitheater at the Santa Fe Indian School campus, probably one of the last remaining buildings over there. 1501 Cerrillos Road. You got to pay to get in. You can get a 2-day pass. We can't mention prices here on KSFR 101.FM, your local community radio station. Call 988-1234 or see Rob DeWalt's story. And the headliner is Buffy St. Marie.
Right, of course.
Buffy's a great name. She was on the plaza last night.
I know. I missed it.
Oh, well,
did
I
you go?
Part of it. I was there for part
Yay.
Of it. Yeah.
Hey, big family event. It's that time again, the Vista Grande Public Library Ice Cream Social and Silent Auction. That's this Sunday, the 24th of August, from 1 to 5. All-you-can-eat Sundays, splits and floats at the El Dorado Community Center, games, prizes, big top auction items, relaxation, music. And there is a small fee. Children under 4 are free. Ice Cream Sunday.
What do you mean relaxation? If you have like 2 ice cream sundaes all you can eat, you're just juiced. You let a little 7-year-old run wild with this stuff. That's where juvenile delinquency starts. They get hopped up on this ice cream and these syrup, and the next thing you know, you got...
Are you just undermining the public service announcement I just read?
No, I'm just suggesting that you be cautious with the all-you-can-eat option. It's not like the buffet at the Camel Rock. But okay, so go have fun with your kids. Make a nice sundae. Forgive me for what I said. But
my doggies would like some ice cream.
There we go. And the doggies. No wonder they are. They led me into an ambush with the sprinklers in the park. They probably had 2 milkshakes in them. Dancing Earth is...
One of my dogs is named Milk, and when he shakes, he's a milkshake.
At Kiva Gallery, Dancing Earth on Saturday. 1 to 2 o'clock with Uderline Tangen and Nicole Salazar and Rhea Thundercloud performing. We got Cheryl Kane speaking about signing copies of Immersion Travel. 5 o'clock Saturday at the Travel Bug. 5 o'clock. That's at 839 Paseo de Peralta. It's free. There's a number of things happening in the museums. Check out our museum page on 115. The Native Roots and Rhythms continues through the weekend, and the 34th annual Santa Fe Bluegrass and All-Time Music Fest is taking place out at the Santa Fe County Fairgrounds. And there's a number of groups, including Eric and Susie Thompson, the Triple LLL Band, and the Southwest Pickers. You want a phone number for the Bluegrass Fest? Listen up. 505-385-4815. Then you have Frog Fest 3, which is another sort of musical concert. That's from 4 to midnight on Saturday at the Santa Fe Brewing Company on Fireplace Road, 424-3333. It's just one of those weekends where there's almost like an overload of stimuli. And I have to go see House Bunny, which is about Anna Faris. She's a Playboy bunny. She gets kicked out of the mansion. She doesn't know what to do, so she goes to the sorority to help the girls become, like, more girlish. I'm serious, so I have to go review this movie. It's really not one.
You better watch the midnight show, because there's too much else to do.
Well, I have to go. And let me see, what else?
Yeah, let me see, what else?
The Film Noir Festival, which starts September 5th, got pushed back to September 19th. I just found out yesterday, in case you're curious. I'll talk about that down the road. Santa Fe Chamber Music Fest has a pre-concert talk with Mark Nykrug. Thank you. And Stephen Ovitzky, 5 o'clock on Sunday. That's the music of Beethoven, Dvorak, and Nykrug.
Huh? Dvorak.
Yeah, that's what I meant, that guy. 6 o'clock as the concert at the Lenzik, 988-1234. Remember that actress, Ann Dvorak? She was great. I wonder if she was named the same way. How do you pronounce it?
Dvorak.
Huh. She was probably the same thing. She was terrific.
You mentioned the Native Cinema Showcase, right?
I did at CCA, 1050 Old Santa Fe Trail.
Can I just say something that I say several times a year?
It's your show, please.
The number of incredible movie options in this town are just out of this world. Not only do we have the CCA Cinematheque, we have the screen at the College of Santa Fe, we have the Santa Fe Film Center, home of the Santa Fe Film Festival, and we also have the Video Library, which has amazing movies.
The Video Library, that's where I'm going to go get some of my
A friend of mine wanted to see a very obscure movie, who was visiting Santa Fe, and I said, let's go to the video. She goes, they will not have it. Nobody has it. They had it.
They have it. They have a great erotica section, too. Yeah, there's a lot of good...
Yep, It Takes a Robert. Mm-hmm.
And Woody Allen's movie, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, is playing at the Vargas. Jonathan Richards gave it a very good review in today's Pasta Sample. So there's a lot of movies, and if you're a movie person, Tropic Thunder's a lot of fun. Tell No One is a suspenseful movie over at the Vargas. Man on Wire's at CCA.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Man on Wire next week.
Did you see it?
I'm about to see it. They're sending me a copy of it.
Did you watch Steam? It opens, like, September...
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about that film on this show as well.
All right, good.
Haven't seen it yet.
All right, good. So there's a lot of stuff in Paso Tiempo, especially about the Indian market, and you should consider doing all of this. Bluegrass Festival, Dean Martin and Taos, Night of New Orleans, Prairie Home Companion, and lots of gallery openings galore.
And much, much more.
Now, let's say you want to get out of town. How much time do we have left?
We have, just a minute.
Well, then I better let you say goodbye.
No.
Well, there's a lot of things. There's music from Angel Fire up in Angel Fire.
That's right.
There's the Chimayo Museum if you want to go up to Chimayo this weekend and get away. There's stuff happening at the Indo Pueblo Cultural Center down in Albuquerque. And you could even go up to Taos and see a whole bunch of different art shows and Dean Martin, as Barbie Jones does them.
Yay.
Everybody loves somebody someplace. Ain't no telling where love may appear. Something in my heart keeps saying, my someplace baby's right here.
Robert Knott, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, is the associate editor of the Pasa Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's here with us every Friday, just about every Friday, speaking of the arts. And we love him just the way he is.
Oh, thank you. Every boy would find what I've got in my arms. Everybody loves Mary Charlotte on 101.FM.
And if you are having trouble hearing us at 101.1 FM,
then
ladies and gentlemen, our signal is, we're working on strengthening the signal. It will be much, much stronger within, we hope, a very short time, by the end of the summer. And also, you can get an FM antenna, or you can stream it at ksfr.org, which a lot of people do anyway. If you have internet connection, ksfr.org, and you can hear a pretty good version of the radio, get a pair of computer speakers. Sorry for any inconvenience as we shift to bigger and better things here on KSFR 101.1.
That's why you have me on the show.
Why? Because you're a bigger and better thing?
Well, I'm better anyway.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz a la carta.
And something in your eyes just told me my sometime is now.
I love the combination of your voice with Francisco Aguavela in the background.
Yeah, I like that too. It's nice to mix things up. It's nice to have a good combo. Like
it
you
is.
And me.
Like you and
Sears
like
and
you and me. You used the correct pronoun.
I certainly did. Why not after being corrected early on?
I know. Well, we're just going to correct you until you get it right, dude.
That's fine. I'd be happy to ameliorate with you every single Friday.
Ameliorate with me. That's broadcasting great. Live from the Santa Fe Baking Company. Hasta la vista. Ciao.
Ooh.